This podcast is sponsored by Smithfield. Everyone in the industry knows that Smithfield Culinary has a full line of great, ready-to-cook, ready-to-eat products with Smithfield and Margarita. But what else is cooking? Tap into the latest culinary trends and get inspired with new recipes created by real working chefs from across the country. Bring more to the table with flavors and menu ideas your guests will savor. Visit smithfieldculinary.com or follow Smithfield Culinary on social media. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. And now it's time to introduce my two lovely co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, Editor-in-Chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I'm Leanne Zinsmeister, Managing Editor of NRN.
I say the same thing every week, Sam, and yet every week you look surprised when you have to say your name.
Oh, it's my turn, I guess. Well then, I guess if we're doing this, here we go. Here is my name.
He's worried he's going to forget it. He's going to open his mouth and go, my name is...
What's my name? I don't know. Don't put this pressure on me. I can't perform
such
like this.
Tough questions.
I was about to sing a song, but I don't think we have the rights or the money to buy the rights to it to sing the song. So
we definitely don't want to get sued. Well. Yeah.
No, just as well that we don't sing.
Amen.
Well, so how have you guys been? How's your week been?
Oh, just dandy. It's blazing hot here and not so much there. So, yeah, enjoying summer now, officially.
Officially
pretty
summer,
cold,
yes.
Pretty cold here.
Leanne's least favorite, cool weather.
I'm such a summer girl, and it's been 65 degrees the last 2 days, and I'm like, if it's going to be summer, I demand summer weather. But that's not getting me anywhere, apparently. So
I don't think it works that way.
Lovely.
There you go.
This weekend is supposed to be just beautiful, Leanne, in New York. So I'm sure it'll.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the weekend for sure.
I hope it'll be nice in Ohio, Sam. So you're not. You are in Ohio, right? I didn't get that wrong for some reason. You made a face like I got that wrong.
I mean, literally for the last 2 months, every day has been consumed by moving to Ohio, and you're asking, wait, did you?
I don't know. You just made a face, and I was like, did I pick the wrong state? Did I do something wrong?
Idaho. I moved to Idaho, not Ohio. No, I moved to
Imagine.
Ohio. Yeah, and things are fine. I have been swarmed with people pretty much almost every day because I have the fortune of now being back around many family and friends, many of whom wanted to reconnect in consecutive days. So I have had lots of social time the past several days, which is all good. I love all these people. I like reconnecting with people, but I like some downtime as well. There's been a lot of food, actually. We just did a big order from Condado Tacos, which is an exciting emerging concept with about 40 locations based here in Columbus. We had some friends over the other day and got a bunch of tacos, and that was fun. So that was a nice dining experience. Oh, and I had my first Raising Cane's. This is going to sound crazy to everybody because, you know, talk Raising Cane's all the time, but I have actually not lived near a Raising Cane's until now. There's one 5 minutes from me. And so we finally, the family did a Raising Cane's day the other day, and as good as advertised.
Wow. Good to know.
Although I don't want to do like shots fired over here or anything, and this is going to be relevant to what we talk about today, but I would go Chick-fil-A sauce over Raising Cane's sauce. So,
sorry. Polynesian
sauce? I had to put
it
out there. It's public now. No, just the Chick-fil-A sauce. They're just Chick-fil-A sauce.
Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's delicious. It'll surprise no one that I have not been to a Raising Cane's.
Not at all. Although you have one in New York now, yeah?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Later this year or early next, they're going to open in Times Square, so we'll probably continue to not go. I had never been to a Raising Cane's until I went to visit them a couple months ago.
So. That's right. Now you're our Raising Cane's insider. You got all the dirt on Raising Cane's.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Yes, now I know so much about Raising Cane's.
Well, they didn't. I mean, they were very like Texas and South, but they were not. I don't know if they have a store in North Carolina almost at all. So I didn't have access to them in North Carolina, but they are now expanding out quickly from their southern base. So everybody else will have access. Although I think actually the Ohio market was one of their early ones, because I know they've been here in Columbus forever. So anyway, that's a plug for Raising Cane's yet also. And I did like the sauce. I'm not knocking the sauce. I'm just saying I'm kind of hooked on Chick-fil-A's sauce. Like I'm not going to eat it by the spoonful, but let's just say a dip. Like I would dip anything in the Chick-fil-A sauce.
I feel like we're going to have to test that next time you come to New York. We're going to bring, we're going to go to Chick-fil-A. We're going to get a bunch of their Chick-fil-A sauces. And then I'm going to just bring several different kinds of food. And it's going to be like a mystery challenge.
Well, I don't think you're hearing me, Holly. They have a Chick-fil-A sauce. One sauce. It's like called Chick-fil-A sauce. You're like, oh yeah, all the sauces. No. Chick-fil-A has a sauce.
Just the one sauce.
No, I'm going to get a bunch of the Chick-fil-A sauce. I'm going to get a bunch of it.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and then
there
I'm
going to
get all different kinds of strange foods, and I'm going to make you dunk them into the Chick-fil-A sauce.
Okay, I see. Yep, no, I'm game. I would do it. I would dip any food into the Chick-fil-A
we'll
sauce.
We'll record it for content.
And I bet you it's good. Yeah, next menu tracker. Maybe Brett and I will do it together. I bet Brett would make that fun.
I mean, I don't know if celery would be good in there. I don't know if raw Brussels sprouts would be good in there.
Oh, it would be so
would
good.
Be good in there.
Yeah, celery would be so good in Chick-fil-A sauce. Are you kidding me?
Celery's made for dunking. Dunk it in anything.
Yeah.
I have no words. I'm speechless.
Oh, Holly. Naive Holly. We did it.
She's speechless.
Yeah. All right, Holly, you may go. Leave the adults here now.
We were talking about.
All right, let's talk about news now. We've sort of meandered into news, sort of gotten our way in there. Sam, you worked in food, I guess. We're time to talk about work.
I gave you a segue on a silver platter.
And I said work, blah. So I feel I really, really got that silver platter and I really just smashed it on the ground. So you're welcome for that.
Oh, gee, thanks.
So breaking news this morning, we record on Thursdays, as you guys know. Breaking news this morning, one of the Chipotle stores.
Now that would be a shock. That would be a real shock.
Looking forward to that day.
One of the Chipotle stores is unionizing. That's pretty big news.
Trying to, yeah.
They're trying to unionize. That's pretty large news for a Thursday morning.
Yes, indeed. I mean, when you look around sort of the country today and where we're at right now, I mean, Apple, Amazon, I think there's just generally momentum for unionization now. So I guess I'm not surprised. And of course, Starbucks within food service being such a huge push toward unionization that it was really a matter of time before other major restaurant companies saw some activity themselves. And so for it to be a Chipotle restaurant does not surprise me. I mean, generally speaking, I think that unionization within QSR and fast casual, I mean, it often has not gone anywhere just because of the sheer amount of turnover in these restaurants. And so to some degree, I see a lot of this as being kind of symbolic. And I'm just curious to see how the momentum sustains itself, because even Starbucks, I don't know, there was like a real push for a while there. And then, you know, if you can't keep that momentum going, it just kind of peters out eventually. So I'll just be interested to see if other Chipotles go in this direction. One last thing I'd say too is what's interesting about it being Starbucks and then Chipotle, they're two companies that have really championed culture in their companies. And for those two companies to really be the first to see this kind of activity is interesting. Although also both of them are vastly corporate owned. So that's also a factor here that there's a real difference with a franchise location. But yeah, it's interesting. And I'll be curious to see where this goes with Chipotle.
For sure. Yeah, I wasn't surprised to see it be Chipotle either. Chipotle stores here in New York have been organizing for a while, but this store, and then this one, of course, is in Maine, is the first one to actually file, but I'm not surprised to see it be Chipotle, and I'm curious to see where it goes. But so far, it looks very similar to the Starbucks push. The company response has been, we wish we had more time to respond to complaints, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, curious to see where it goes, both at Chipotle and also industry-wide.
Well, we'll keep following that news and keep you guys updated as the story breaks and as more news develops. But in the meantime, let's talk about Chick-fil-A, which I accidentally named as the store that was unionizing accidentally. So let's
Chick-fil-A
talk about
is
Chick-fil-A.
not
It is not
unionizing. Let's
unionizing.
emphasize that.
As
They're not unionizing.
expected.
Not.
Yet.
They have introduced a new drive-through prototype that has to do with mobile ordering, following in the footsteps of a lot of their other competitors to do this mobile ordering drive-through. So you go through the drive-through, but it's only for people who order through the app. Something that Sweetgreen's been doing a lot of. So I'm curious what you guys think about this coming from Chick-fil-A. I mean, I realize that they have a lot of to-go orders, but they're also a restaurant that is so built on hospitality. So I find it an interesting move. I mean, we talked about it with Panera last week. These brands that are like built on the fact that they are dine-in or hospitality focused, having to move where the consumer is. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, look, Chick-fil-A, they are the kings at drive-through. I mean, they crush drive-through. I mean, they're so good at it. And anybody who has seen a drive-through at rush hour, or just not even at rush hour, but one that maybe is in a kind of awkwardly located spot where cars are pouring out into the road, everybody knows that Chick-fil-A has just massive amounts of drive-through business. And they're very, very good at it. They even though they have long lines, they get people through relatively quickly. I say relatively just because it could be a long time, but for so many cars, it's still impressive how quickly they can get folks through. And I've been in some crazy Chick-fil-A drive-throughs that we like swirl around the restaurant a couple different times, and it's like an airport with all the people doing movements and employees telling you where to go. It's fascinating stuff, and they're just really, really good at it. Now, all of that setup is to say, this news from them to me doesn't seem as big of news as like Taco Bell's drive-through prototype where they're doing the four lanes and all of that. To me, this is more Chick-fil-A already does accept mobile orders in the drive-through, but you go through the regular drive-through. So at my old Chick-fil-A, there was like a tent in the parking lot, and you had two lanes you'd go through, and you'd place your order with somebody, and the third one was your mobile order, and then they'd all come into the same. They'd funnel out of those three lanes into one lane, where you would go through with a regular business to get your mobile order. All of this is doing is they're introducing an express lane for mobile units at a number of locations, which just makes a ton of sense. I mean, because now they can make their drive-through even more efficient by pulling out that mobile order business, which presumably will only get bigger and bigger, and so they can more efficiently run their normal business and keep their mobile business over here. And I'm sure it's just gonna help them to run through business even faster than before.
Agreed. Yeah, Chick-fil-A also has always prided itself on having like quick turnaround times in the drive-through lane and in the stores. So this will just help them keep those numbers where they are. This is definitely much more of a practical move rather than a flashy one, like with Taco Bell. A big part of Taco Bell's play there is just, look what we can do. And that's great. We've talked about that before, but with Chick-fil-A, it's, hey, how can we get our customers what they want faster? And yeah, so I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, we're talking about these drive-through prototypes every single week now, so it's not a surprise to see another store doing that. And this is great because they're, adding them to stores that already have existing drive-throughs. So it seems like, I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy operationally because what do I know? But it's easier than adding on to stores or starting from scratch with a totally new prototype.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. So it says they have this operating at 60 locations. And without having seen how they are working currently, I'll be interested to see what that looks like. I mean, one thing I know about drive-through is that, the drive-through business itself, it might seem like, oh yeah, you just put a window on the side in the lane that wraps around, but it is so much more complicated than it sounds to design a drive-through, especially when you consider the lot you're on. So what I'll be interested in is, if this is successful for Chick-fil-A, how do they retrofit their restaurants and their drive-through lanes and their current throughput? How does that all change, or does this mostly go into new builds? Because like I said, at my old Chick-fil-A, you know, I can't imagine how they would add a totally new express drive-through lane. But they did manage by having just a side of the parking lot where you kind of went around. So there's going to be some finagling they'll have to do as they add these to restaurants, and I'll be really curious to see how they do it. But yeah, I mean, if anybody's going to figure out how to do this well, it's going to be Chick-fil-A.
I mean, they said that it did significantly improve the time in a statement from the company that it was in their tests, it did really improve the time that it took for people to go through the drive-through. So far it seems to be working in what they've been doing so far.
And imagine how much more business they can do. I mean, you know, they're going to get the business regardless. I doubt there are that many people who turn away when they see a long line at a Chick-fil-A, but maybe they do, because those lines are really, really long sometimes. So just imagine if you can significantly decrease the amount of time that a mobile order has to wait for their food. But that's going to also decrease the time of the regular business, because it's going to pull some of the cars out of that. You know, they're doing almost 5 million AUV already. Like, if they make this even better than before, how much more business could we see them doing in a couple of years?
I mean, we say that all the time. Chick-fil-A is, you know, one of the top 5 brands in the country by sales, and they're only open 6 days a week. This is how.
Yep.
Stuff like this.
All right. So for our last story of the day, just want to touch on this a little bit. We're kind of running out of time. But we do have another CEO who has left their post. The CEO over at Robin has stepped down, joining the great resignation of CEOs that we've seen. What do you guys think? Do you think that there are any strong contenders for the role that we've seen so far? It's a brand that is in a turnaround. What do you guys think about a potential CEO? Do you think that we are just kind of sitting here looking for anyone right now?
Do you want to be CEO of Red Robin?
I don't know. Are you looking? Here's what I'll say about Red Robin specifically. We've seen a lot of, as you said, so many CEO retirements, etc. this year. It was always Paul Murphy's plan to retire at the end of his 3-year contract at Red Robin. Now, it was not Paul Murphy's plan to see the brand through a pandemic. And to go through all of the things that he's gone through at Red Robin since he joined in 2019. But it was always his plan to retire at this point. And he's retiring at the end of the year. He hasn't stepped down yet. So my guess is that while the landscape certainly looks different than we thought it would at this point, that the company has probably been thinking about this question for 3 years and then some. So I don't have any predictions at this point. But I'm guessing that the company has its options already.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the bigger narrative here is not, you know, who's going to be CEO of Red Robin and, oh my gosh, Paul Murphy's retiring. The bigger narrative here is the trend in leaders leaving their posts, because you see this outside of food service, too. You see it in retail and other industries, which is, I think, a lot of CEOs... for starters, they've navigated businesses through the most complicated, difficult season in the history of business. But I think a lot of them also didn't fully expect the economic environment we're in right now, with the inflation, the expected recession. I don't remember the company, but I was reading a story recently about a CEO of a major, I think it was a tech company, who resigned because of he could not foresee. I think so many leaders thought we would, once we were behind the, you know, pandemic was behind us. We're post-pandemic, you know, we'd be rife with opportunity. And a lot of this particular company was not prepared for inflation, and sales are tanking. And look, nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody could have expected this economic environment. But I just have to imagine, if you're a CEO of a company who's, you know, gotten this far into the pandemic, and then you're looking at, oh, now I have to guide my company through a recession. I mean, if I was close to retirement, I'd consider that too. I would say, you know what? Not worth it. I'm gonna check out, because it could be bumpy for another year or two, whether that's a recession or not. It's gonna be pretty tricky couple of years. So anyway, that's my guess. I can't speak for Paul Murphy, but I think that that's the narrative here with a lot of leaders leaving, which is, it's a good time to go.
It's a good time to go, and it's a good time to get a new job too. I mean, I feel like it's I just feel like it's a good time to get a new job. If you're a leader, not if you're somebody like me at my level, but if you're a leader.
I was like, Holly,
are you giving notice right now?
Yeah, that's a weird way to do it, but kudos to you for the creativity, I guess.
If you're a CEO, if you're a CMO, if you're a CFO, like if you're in the C-suite, this is a great time to be moving around, because these jobs are so liquid right now. They're moving around. I don't know if liquid's the right word. It just sort of
fluid. Fluid is like what you're going for. It's a very fluid situation. Okay. Anyway.
And on that note.
She tries so hard.
She really, and she like threw herself into it too. She was like, I'm not backing down on this.
Anyway, who's our guest today, Holly?
Our guest today is John Swinsky, the president of Applebee's. Ron Ruggles interviewed him, and you will hear from them right after this.
This podcast is sponsored by Smithfield. Everyone in the industry knows that Smithfield Culinary has a full line of great, ready-to-cook, ready-to-eat products with Smithfield and Margarita. But what else is cooking? Tap into the latest culinary trends and get inspired with new recipes created by real, working chefs from across the country. Bring more to the table with flavors and menu ideas your guests will savor. Visit smithfieldculinary.com or follow Smithfield Culinary on social media.
One of the things, John, go ahead, just introduce yourself. And the first question is, you mentioned in the call today about the youth demographic for Applebee's. Can you amplify that a little bit more?
Sure, Ron. This is John Swinsky, president of Applebee's Grill and Bar. I'm in a vehicle at the moment, so I hope my audio is clear. It's been interesting to watch demographics over the past 24 months. Older guests have been more likely to stay at home, perhaps, and less likely to dine out. We have a very balanced age demographic, as well as ethnic and income demographic. But as I look at age specifically, 80% of our guests are now Gen Z, Millennial, and Gen X, with millennial being the largest percentage at 34%. And we find great strength in that. And I find it interesting that most people have a perception of Applebee's one way or another. We are younger than the category, casual dining in the aggregate, substantially younger, and more balanced across age, ethnicity, and income, which we find to be a core strength. And we also happen to have, we lead on affordability, Ron. And that's important in an inflationary environment. We happen to have an average check that's at the lower end of the CDR spectrum, casual dining spectrum, which we also think plays very well in this particular environment.
What do you think has led to Applebee's strength, especially the 34% millennial figure?
We have mojo. say that we really have a terrific team of franchisees and leaders within the Applebee's brand, and we've created a lot of cultural relevance. First off, I think eating good in the neighborhood is more relevant than ever coming out of a pandemic. It kind of speaks of one, eating good in the neighborhood in our restaurants or at your home. 28% of our business is now off-premise. I also believe music resonates, and music is in our DNA. It's a core component of what we do and how we connect. You know, we've done so emotionally without talking promotion or price or product. We did so in January, February. Here's why I fundamentally believe Applebee's has become a centerpiece of American culture. I believe genuinely we've earned America's trust throughout the pandemic. I think that's important. Eating good in the neighborhood is, it just resonates with America, in particular our guest, which has household income under $75,000 or about $75,000. And so I believe music is important and it allows us to connect emotionally with America. It's part of our DNA. Everything we do is essentially music-based. We wanted to connect with our most loyal regular guests in January, February, and thank them for sticking with us through the pandemic. So we celebrated what we call our regulars, and we literally shot two ads, music-based, to that great theme song from Cheers, "Sometimes You Want to Be," or "Sometimes You Want to Go," where everyone knows your name. That lyric resonates. And we featured our real guests. There was not a single actor or actress in those ads. That resonated off the charts in January, February. You know, there aren't many brands that can claim the ability to partner with Disney on Jungle Cruise and partner with Walker Hayes and Fancy Like Applebee's. It was a bit fortuitous that Walker wrote a song, and he's a big country music artist now, about Applebee's and Date Night at Applebee's, which happens, you know, all the time with our brand and other brands. But Date Night also consists of Applebee's in a movie, which is why we partner with companies like the Walt Disney Company and, you know, on a film like Jungle Cruise. And we'll be having a, you know, and happy to share the detail with you at the right time, another partnership with a major studio behind a major blockbuster film coming up here as well. So long-winded way of saying, we really appeal across demographics, age, ethnicity, income. It is interesting to note that we have become younger over the past 2 years. Our guest profile has, relative to the casual dining category. And again, our largest segment is the millennial segment, which very much grew up with the Applebee's brand.
That 34% of millennials in the makeup, it kind of dovetails with your stated goal to get rid of phone orders and go to all digital. Can you explain that?
Sure. That speaking, you know, primarily here about our off-premise business, and let's just take a look at Q1 of this year. 28% of our business is off-premise, where folks either come and pick it up and take it home, or they have it delivered. And so it's about an equal split, car side to go, where you come and pick it up, Ron, or delivery. That guest oftentimes, all those delivery orders come in online to our point of sale system. We like that. It allows our restaurant teams to focus on what they're doing at the restaurant level. That could be filling those orders or taking care of our dining guests. 70% of our to-go orders come online, and or through a call center, which comes to our restaurants through, you know, through our point of sale system. So it's a digital order. It doesn't require a team member to pick up a phone and walk a guest through an order and transact that that particular order. We'd like to have 100% of our orders digital, and recognizing that there will always be a percentage of our guests calling on their cell phones. That's quite natural, especially when you think folks working during the day, retired, probably a dual-income household. No one really is in a position to cook, so they're going to place that order on their way home from work in their car. We would just like that to go to our call center, which is exceptional. I come to the restaurant digitally via our point of sale system, and that, quite honestly, our core it's not a core competency of our team members to be answering phones and fulfilling orders over the phone. We'd much rather have professionals doing that, and a large percentage of our restaurants are now on our call center program, which can either be a live Applebee's representative or automated, which some guests prefer.
It kind of is linked to this, but you said to this morning that you opened your fourth drive-through window or drive-through order pickup window, and you have 15 conversions planned. How is that working, and what is the benefit to the brand?
Well, Rama, it's a great question. Because it's only four, and they're all recent, one in Arkansas, one in Texas, one in Columbia, South Carolina, one in Virginia. So I don't want to share data. What I will tell you is it works on three fronts. Number one, there's a financial benefit to our franchisee. Number two, the guest loves it, and I'll explain that in a moment. And number three, our team members love it even more. The guest benefits because once they realize we have a drive-through lane, they can place their order online and just come pick it up. It's so much easier for them. They become accustomed to that habit very quickly, and they like it. Their order is literally just handed through the window to their window of their car. But the team members like it because... Ron, are you in Chicago? I can't remember.
I'm in Dallas.
You're in Dallas. That's right. If you think about, you know, cold weather or precipitation, raining, it's snowing, it's ice, it's cold. Right now, for car side to go, team members have to bring that food packaged up out to a car. That's tough if you're in Chicago and it's 15 degrees, or it's tough if you're in Dallas and it's pouring rain. So it's easier because now it just goes through. The other benefit there is I can stay open later. Our franchisees feel it's also safer walking through parking lots, and therefore our late night, which is a pretty meaningful business, can stay open even later with the addition of a drive-through pickup lane. And I do anticipate, at least our target is to have 15 of those by year-end dispersed across the country. I think at that point, Ron, I'll have a sufficient sample size to provide data in terms of sales impact and perception impact.
When you're thinking about doing a conversion to the order pickup window, what do you have in mind? What type of real estate?
It would, as you might imagine, every... site and building is a little different. So what that requires quite directly is a conversation with the municipality and permitting. And there's a strong argument for creating a drive-through pickup lane. Again, it's not a lane where one would come and place an order at a speaker box as you would with QSR, like at McDonald's. But the requirement here is we're going to take out some parking spots. We're going to create a drive-through lane where you as an online guest can just come in and pick it up. And then we're going to kick out the current area, bump out, if you will, a small addition to the building so that we reach the lane with a drive-through pickup window. And that could cost $100,000. It could cost $150,000. While it takes away some of our parking spots, it provides for a nice, easy ingress, egress. And quite candidly, because 28% of our business is now off-premise, I probably don't need as many parking spots. So I don't know how many of our 1,578 restaurants would qualify to have that conversion take place. Perhaps it's half. you know, some lots are just too small or too tight and maybe prohibitive, but the argument is pretty compelling. It also makes it safer for the municipality, as I said, in terms of car traffic and neighbors coming in and out of a restaurant. So we're hopeful. Our objective is to assess the business case behind these initial 15, and our franchisees are very interested. You know, the directional read based upon what we're seeing in four restaurants is very favorable from an operational, guest, and financial perspective. But we're going to wait to see what the 15, and I apologize here, I'm moving through a bumpy road in my car. We're going to assess the business case at year end, and we'll have some good data in Q1 of 2023.
And because you're on a bumpy road, we'll make the last question. Anything about the first quarter that you think you want to highlight, or anything about the year ahead that you think is especially good to mention?
Ron, I think Applebee's is exceedingly well positioned, and I don't just say that because I lead the brand. We have 31 very sophisticated and strategic partners. They understand the delicate balance between maintaining momentum, which we certainly have, and that trajectory, and maintaining their affordability leadership and also protecting their margins in an inflationary environment. We're thoughtful that the pandemic appears to be behind us, and in my strong view is there will be winners and losers. There are winners and losers post-pandemic. Those who earned the trust of America over the past 2 years, those who I think will be big winners, those who have strong restaurant-level culture, which our franchisees do, and those who have scale will navigate this, in my opinion, successfully. If you don't have that scale or you don't have that culture, you haven't earned mark over the past 2 years, I think it'll be tough sledding. Anyway, this is my second stint, as you know, Ron, with Applebee's. I couldn't be more bullish than I am right now about our prospects in 22 and beyond, frankly. We are well positioned. We moved average unit volumes from $2.2 million to $2.6 million over the last 4 years. And our bold goal right now is to attain $3 million average unit volumes over the next few years.
I'm most interested in what song you're going to come up with this summer to follow up on Fancy Like.
Well, you know, we'll give you a sneak peek at the right time. It's part of the job that I enjoy in partnership with our Chief Marketing Officer, Joel Yasinski. We spend a lot of time very thoughtfully selecting the right piece of music. It's interesting, music that you and I may have grown up with. One may argue, gosh, that's not relevant for the millennial or Gen Z segment. And I would say, au contraire, we would find that a lot of that stuff that was iconic and universally loved back in the 70s and 80s resonates big time with younger guests. It's interesting how that comes around. But anything that can cause you to stop what you're doing at home and begin to tap your toe and bob your head and turn towards the television or your phone, depending on what you're watching, we think is good and compelling. And you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously, Ron. We're in the hospitality business. Eating good in the neighborhood's our position. We think we're pretty good for how America feels right now. And they're hungry to dine out, and that's evident in our numbers.
Well, I'll let you get back on the road so you can continue to listen to whatever new music is appearing there. And thank you for your time today, John.